we hang out and discuss everything King Falls AM and improv on tape. Warning, this podcast, as usual, does contain spoilers, specifically for King Falls episode 23, I Got 99 Problems But a Tim Ain't One, and Improv on Tape season 2 finale, episode 8, Everything Matters or It Doesn't. Whatever. It matters. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. But also, in general, as you guys know, we try to stick away from, well, actually, that's not true. We don't even try to stay away from anything major anymore. We just go about our business and spoil things for people who may not have listened to it before. So if you haven't, sorry, but it's like, I don't know, 100 years old. So catch up already. Anyway, I'm Dana.
Oh, and I'm pissing people off to the left, to the right, and to side. Because that's how I roll, because I'm a motherfucking troll, bitch.
Dawn is
so, yeah.
Left, right, and center.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, that's, I woke up and I chose violence this weekend. And like I chew, like I do every other fucking day.
Like you do.
And, some people don't like facts and science, so some people got pissed off, and I just don't give a shit. And also, my name is Dawn, by the way.
Yeah, some people just don't want to believe in facts and science, and that's fine. Believe what you want to believe. I cannot fix stupid. I cannot educate you. Yeah, if you don't want to believe in facts and science, but I have straight up told people, when you get your medical degree or your PhD in epidemiology, microbiology, chemistry, infectious disease science, get back with me. Until then, you're just some idiot on the internet. So I'm going to go with the people who know what the hell they're talking about. You rando. Rando dumbass dudes on the internet. And even not so random people like the ones I'm related to that.
Yep.
I just hang my head in shame. Shame, okay. I tell you, shame.
It's okay, Dana. It's okay.
I'm sorry. I'm better. It's all good. Anyway.
I understand.
Make your announcements while I collect myself.
Okay. So, I don't have many announcements, honestly. Other than, I believe that our boy, Christopher Ninnis has his video that's going to be, you know, the kids are still here. I believe that's going to be at another fair out in the Los Angeles. So that's cool.
Well, here in the area, folks.
Yep. So you'll have to go to the Twitterage account. Related to that, it's the kids are still here, whatever. And check that out. It's been a while since I saw that, so that's why I'm just like, dang, you know. Also, sure it. it would appear that Mr. Kyle Brown, Maverick, legend, wizard, is going to be in an episode of 90 Degrees South, so that's going to be epic as shit, and I can't fucking wait because I need to hear that motherfucker's voice.
Yep, and when we get announcement dates, folks, we will let you know.
Yes, and
before they tell you, but we'll repeat it for those who might miss it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll repeat it. Also, I believe our gentlemen are recording season 3 of Improv on Tape.
Last I heard, they were still recording, and that was about a week ago, so.
Yep. And I am still keeping that hope alive.
You know what? Your endless hope is an inspiration to us all, Dawn.
Thank you. Thank you. I know. I do what I can.
And when the improv guys let us know when season 3 will be released, once again, we will pass that along. Not
and you know, if you guys could even let us know when phase 3 is going to happen, that's even better.
Even better, absolutely.
Even better!
You know, because as the biggest fans of two podcasts that shall remain nameless, but let's face it, we're talking about them right now.
Yeah.
We think if you want to give us some advance notice when release dates are happening, just so we can prepare. We won't tell anybody before you tell anybody, but just so we can prepare ourselves.
Yep.
I can make sure I put it in my notes beforehand.
We can just be like, those podcasts are returning soonish, and leave it at that.
That's right.
Or not even say that. We'll just be like, oh yeah, you know, they're still working on the magic. The magic is still being made.
That's right. And processed. The magic is still happening.
And edited. So, let's see. What are the news?
Editing and design. But yeah, as soon as we know something, we'll let you know. Also, yeah, if anybody wants to send us some video of their Zoom recordings.
Yep.
For a certain improvisational podcast, I would not be opposed. Yeah. And we promise, we swear, I will not release it.
We solemnly swear that we are up to no good. Oh, sorry, wait.
There is that, but I also solemnly swear that we will not release the video without everybody involved.
Whoopsies.
I can't make these promises for Dawn, but I promise that if you send it, I won't let Dawn see it until she promises. How's that? Of course, you know, that's just where we at. So was that it for your announcement there, Missy?
COVID is on the rise.
Sadly, wear your masks, people. Get your
vaccine. Wear your masks. Continue to wash your hands. I know y'all are fucking tired of it. We're fucking tired of it.
Amen.
But we got to do it. Okay? We got to fucking do it.
Still spread it. So, you know. Yeah. Doesn't mean the vaccine's 100% and you can still spread it. So do what you got to do to protect yourself and those around you, folks. But at the same time, yeah, I'm kind of sick of sitting in my house for a year and a half. So I get it. I understand. Okay, well, my one and only announcement so far is that we actually have two King Falls episodes tonight. Before we get into 99 Problems, we're going to cover the special announcement that aired on April 1st, 2016, about Sheriff Gunderson and his zero tolerance policy regarding April Fools. I know, two episodes in 1 month, because I looked at 99 Problems. I went, the air date was April 2nd. What the fuck? And then, oh yeah, April Fool's Day. So anyway, on this one, and it was a very short episode. I think it was like 6 minutes or something, if that. It opens with Bert Gladstone from Channel 13. Nobody watches Channel 13, Bert. He's thanking Ernie Salcedo of Ernie Salcedo's Mufflers and recently opened Ernie Salcedo's leather-bound books for an interview. We didn't have to listen to the interview. And I kind of say thankfully, because it would have been a lot of Bert. And I also kind of say too bad, because it would have been a lot of Ernie Salcedo. And we kind of like Ernie, even if he is, you know, a mobster who tried to kill people that we love. That's a different story.
Yeah, that also hasn't happened yet.
Yes, no, that hasn't happened yet either.
Spoilers!
Spoiler alert! That's all, folks. We head over to Maggie Masterson with a special report. She starts out with, for some, this is just a normal spring day. For others, April Fool's Day is a day that will, and I quote, live in infamy. Infamy. I can't say that word. Sorry, folks. She is live with then Deputy Troy Krieghauser, who is having flashbacks with his microphone in his beatboxing days. We did not, however, get any beatboxing on this episode.
Shame. Tragic.
Yeah, because Troy's actually pretty good at beatboxing. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, literally.
I've heard it with my own two little ears. Troy announces that Gunderson takes issue with the day set aside for tomfoolery and they're fools. He's not putting up with it. And oh my God, I can't even read my own notes and they're typed. Gunderson and Grisham instituted a zero tolerance policy when it comes to April Fools. He has said that this was an action when oh my God, Don, I'm so sorry. You're going to have some serious fuck ups to edit out of here or not, whatever. He saw this in action when Deputy Duncan Beadle replaced Gunderson's phone earpiece with an ink pad. Oh, I want to see that. I want to do that to somebody one of these days. Although, really, how do you not like realize it's an ink pad versus a phone?
I think that, you know, Gunderson just can't fucking take a joke. He's like, April Fool's Day is canceled, because he's a douchebag.
Well, yes, he is that too. But also,
fucking,
you know, like,
Gunderson.
How do you not know the difference between your phone earpiece and your ink pad? I don't know.
Because he's just like,
he's an idiot. Super observant for an officer of the law.
And by going, and ladies and gentlemen, I am pretending to hold to just put up cell phones to my ear without looking at if they're really cell phones or not. Because I'm cool that way.
The observational skills of this so-called sheriff worry me.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't look, when you pick up a cell phone versus an ink pad. But
I know.
I don't know. Maybe I'll put ink on somebody's ear.
I personally would like to congratulate Duncan Beadle on providing a good April Fool's Day joke, some type of hilarity and jocularity to celebrate the day.
I am right there with you, but unfortunately, like we said, Gunderson can't take a joke, and Dunkel is no longer with the King Falls Sheriff's Department
as of this episode.
True. This is true. As of April 1st, 2016, Duncan Beadle is no longer with the King Falls Sheriff.
Also, Cecil is totally fine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I got it first. Yeah, that's okay. I let you win. I let you win. Anyway, this is not a new rule, though. It dates back to General Abilene, who once shot one of his own troops after the soldier replaced his dress cutlass with a stick. Again, how can you not tell?
They must be painfully oblivious to certain things like that. I mean, a decorative cutlass is definitely not going to have the same weight and heft and feel as a stick.
No, it's got to be a really big stick, like a branch. And at that point, you've got whole other problems if you can't tell a branch from a cutlass.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I didn't think about it before, but it's suddenly making me wonder about, is there something in the air surrounding King Falls that just messes with people's ability to observe their surroundings? It might be all the impressions. They get in the way. You can't see through them as well. I mean, you see through them, but you can't, they're still there blocking your vision.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if that might actually be like the case, because it seems like King Falls and Big Pine are like, you know, their own little biome, like their own little like place apart from everywhere else.
Yeah. Don't forget Hollybrook. I'm going to even throw Skilly Ridge in there too, because Hollybrook,
Skilly Ridge,
gypsies and curses and portals. And yeah, let's not even talk about the portals going on in Doyle's house right now.
Damn. You know what? That actually kind of reminds me. I need to start naming some of my gaming maps Skidly Ridge. I've named maps in 7 Days to Die and Valheim, King Falls and Big Pine, but I've never named one Skidly Ridge before.
So I'll have to do that. I'll have to do that tonight and see what happens.
Kelly Ridge, Sweetser Forest, Hollybrook.
Well, Sweetser Forest is part of King Falls, though.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of its own thing, too. Because like, it kind of bridges the gap. It's like you have to go through Sweetser Forest to get.
But I was talking more of like town names rather than, you know, areas. Yeah. Like I'm not gonna name a map, Devil's Doorstep or something like that. You know.
Oh, I totally would name a map Devil's Doorstep.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially in 7 Days to Die, that would be actually pretty cool.
Named my bottomless closet, the junk closet that I'm afraid to open the door because I'm afraid shit will fall out on me. I might name that the devil's doorstep because, you know, I might be crushed to death if I open it. But that's a whole different podcast. Dana cleaning out the closet. Yep. So yeah, anyway. General Abilene is running around murdering people for stealing his cutlass. Good Lord, General. Got some unfinished business going on up there in King Falls, and I don't think it has to do with leading people away from a battle. Earlier, Maggie also talked to local librarian and town historian Emily Potter, about the fact that the lack of love for April Fools goes back even further. Legend has it. Ooh, who does that remind you of? Legend has it that back in the day when the Beauregards first settled King Falls, one of Lester Beauregard's men. Now, who the hell is Lester Beauregard and why didn't we hear about him in King Falls Chronicles?
Maybe that was...
I'm just saying.
Lester Beauregard. Well, I'm wondering if it's one of those things where, like, maybe he's a relative, maybe he's not a relative.
Like he's a pseudonym.
Well, maybe not even a pseudonym, because I have, like, for example, here in Maine, there are a lot of people that have my surname, but I'm like not related to them. You know, right. We just have the same last name. Oh, so maybe it's something like that, you know?
Maybe he wasn't of Harrison Beauregard family?
Yeah, or maybe he was like
another Beauregard that happened to settle.
Like a cousin or a fucking relative that actually came to King Falls.
Maybe, that's a possibility.
And visited or something, still, you know?
Who is Lester and why did Lily not dig him up? Anyway, Lester Beauregard, one of his men was seen giving food to the Hatchinhaw Indians. I just unplugged my computer.
Oh, dude. You know what?
What?
I think, dude, I just realized something.
Oh.
Would you like to hear what I just realized?
Yes, please.
We have done more episodes of this show than Beyond the Falls did going through their episodes.
We have. And do you know what else I realized the other day? That we are 3 episodes away from hitting 1 year.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. I realized that. Actually, I think it was last night when I was trying to sleep and I was like, oh my God, we're almost at the 1 year mark.
I was thinking, yeah, we should take a nice little hiatus break between now and a year. Nice little month-long hiatus. Actually, you know what? We should do that between to mark the end. Well, actually, no, wait a minute. Because we're talking about episode 22, right?
We're at episode, technically we're at 23.
Oh, shit. So 26 really?
A year. Yes, we're at episode 23.
Fuck.
So 26 would be a year. Let me pull it up because I can't remember the titles of every episode.
I thought 25 was a year.
No, because it's 26, 52 weeks in a year, so 26 bi-weekly or bi-monthly.
Oh, but I was talking about like going over like the Samiversary and shit.
Oh, the Samiversary. Well, yeah, hang on.
If we were to go by it that way.
Hang on, because that, come on. Well,
I was like, damn, yo.
Three episodes, including this one. Because, once we do this one, then we'll have April 15th and then May 1st. So we hadn't started recording this one yet when I went, oh, we're three episodes away. Now we're two episodes away. So that's where my math got a little bit.
Whoa.
Out of whack.
Holy fucking cannolis.
I know. We are just all over the place, man. We're crushing it, people. Crushing it, I tell you.
Although, for the record, if certain gentlemen wanted to continue doing Beyond the Falls episodes for their Patreon, I wouldn't say no. I would say yes. I would say thank you. Thank you, dear sweet baby Jack in the Box Jesus. And I'd like, please, please do continue releasing episodes. Because I think we need to be in the know. Inquiring minds need to know, gentlemen.
Exactly.
You know, I'm just saying, just throwing it out there.
I would not be adverse to that. Okay, I finally pulled it up because my phone's being stupid. Now, where are we? So yeah, we are at 23. I got 99 problems, but a Tim ain't one. Then we got the McGuff files. Sorry. That's a whole separate issue. And then the Happy Samiversary. So yes, after this, we will have two episodes left.
Well.
So we were at three episodes, including the one that we haven't even discussed yet, because I'm not finished with our special episode yet.
Yep.
With our announcements. I'm not finished with the announcements yet. But we've been plugging along for quite some time. Let's see. So Lester Beauregard. So one of his men giving the Hatchinhaw Indians food and flogged him and hung him on the spot. It wasn't a prank, but it did happen on April 1st. So according to the ebook, King of King Falls. Yeah, so it's all tied in together, apparently. Maggie.
See, in that case, obviously it's a bunch of bullshit because Howard made it up.
Yeah, well, you know. He got his facts screwed up. We don't know. But anyway, Maggie warns people that they may want to avoid pranks. Troy confirms that there are checkpoints going in and out of town for people to drop off their prank paraphernalia, say that three times fast, and that he and other deputies have been authorized to arrest pranksters. And he's not just talking about the Williams boys either. Although, before he said that line, I was like, Jacob, that's you, Jacob. We're talking to you, Jacob. And then,
see, I would totally be like greasing up poles of staircases with Vaseline.
No, I wouldn't want to do anything that hurt people. Well, some people. Maybe a few people.
Well, maybe not like the whole pole, but the end.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to do any permanent physical damage to anybody.
True.
But maybe take out all the stoplights.
And you got to have a fucking whoopee cushion too. There's got to be a whoopee cushion involved.
Oh, yeah, come on.
Because otherwise it's not April Fool's.
Right. I mean, whatever. But yeah, there would be some pranks happening. I would have to, though, get on my leather pants, which nobody wants to see. And nobody wants to see that. I have to dress up like a ninja with a mask on so nobody can see it. Well, let's see Don's eyeball. She's wiggling her eyebrows at me. That way nobody would know it was me. But also nobody would mistake me and my buns coming out of the gym like they do Ben's buns and a certain masked superhero's buns. I'm looking at you, Cynthia. But yeah, so that was our anti-April Fool's Day announcement. So if you happen to find yourself in King Falls on April 1st, you may want to rethink some of those pranks, or don't, whatever. You're all grown-ass adults. And even if you're not, you're not my responsibility if you're a teenager. So there you go.
See, I would say if you find yourself in King Falls on April 1st,
why do you
be pull some pranks, but be aware of your surroundings. And just think those pranks through. You know what I'm saying? You know, they don't need to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
But they need to be fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So yeah, no.
Like unleash a herd of garbage bears in the King Falls studio. Because I'm not above pranking the boys either. I'm just saying.
That's true.
Just make sure it's not the, you know, racist garbage bears that Gwendolyn put a curse on.
Yes.
You know, regular garbage bears.
I think that one garbage bear would be enough to, like, completely freak Ben out.
Put a picture.
He would just be like, what the shit? And he would, like, lose his shit.
Oh, actually, that's perfect. Oh, wait. Okay. So, plaster the walls with pictures of garbage bears.
Ooh!
He turns, and you gotta like double and triple them up. So when you try to tear it down, there's another picture behind it. So that everywhere he looks, there's a picture of a garbage bear. And then when he opens up the office door, there's a garbage bear raiding his Snickers drawer.
Ooh. I did something from like very similar to that. And it was, oh my gosh, I can't even remember what the original prank was, but I think I was teasing him about the Red Sox versus the Yankees, because this dude was like a hardcore Yankees fan. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, it wasn't even April Fool's Day, but I was just like, this has to happen. So I was like printing out like memes of the Red Sox that posting everywhere in the office.
Oh my god. Okay. So
like, Merry Christmas.
At one of my former jobs, one of my coworkers went on vacation. And you know, we'll call him Ernie because we had a Burton and Ernie. We'll call him Ernie.
Really?
Bert and then because they looked like Bert and Ernie, not
oh okay.
Ernie. We'll call him Ernie.
I was going to say, did he have an accent?
No. This was not Bert and or Ernie. This was
Hoosie Wutsies.
Yeah, with his Hoosie Wutsies and his Bobs. He went on vacation, and it was the middle of summer, or maybe the end of summer. It might have been like August, September time. He went on vacation, and I was working overtime on a Saturday. So there weren't very many people in the office. So I went over to his desk on my break, with four or five huge ass rolls of Christmas wrapping paper and wrapped everything on his desk. Each pen got individually wrapped, then put into the pen cup, which was wrapped. And then that whole thing got wrapped. His mouse got wrapped. His keyboard got wrapped. His monitor got wrapped. His second monitor got wrapped. His phone got wrapped. His receiver got wrapped because I took the receiver off and I wrapped it separately. I did not invade his filing cabinet, but I did pull the filing cabinet out and wrap the filing cabinet. I wrapped his chair. I took everything off of his desk and put gift wrap all over his desk and wrapped his desk for him. He was not happy when he came back from vacation. I don't know why. But he did prank me though. He did prank me back. I bought a car and the bank called me wanting to know if it was okay for my dad to make a payment. And I'm like, okay, Ernie, whatever. He's like, who's Ernie? This is David. I'm calling from the bank. I'm like, Ernie, you're not funny. I'm like, no, this is David from the bank. I'm here with, and he gave me my stepfather's name and the last four of his social, because it was the same bank.
Yeah.
He wants to make a payment on your car. And I was all like, I stood up, And I looked over at Ernie's desk, and it was Dave from the bank. My dad was there. He was making a payment on my car. But somehow, Ernie, I almost said his real name, Ernie overheard the conversation, and I am'd Dave from the bank to go along with it. And I'm all like,
what a shithead.
It scared the shit out of me, but it was, and hey, my dad made a payment on my car, so I didn't care. I pranked another friend. She went on vacation. I pranked another friend. I got that caution tape. Yeah. And I wrapped her desk in the caution tape. And then I took scotch tape because I didn't want to use chalk to do it. I took scotch tape and I made a body outline on the, and she came back in and she was like, she didn't even look. I wasn't even on her team. I was way on the other side of the office. She didn't even look at her team. She just turns around, Dana! Why are we assuming this is me? Okay, it was. But why assume it was me?
Oh, I've been known to wrap former coworkers' cars in shrink wrap. Good times.
I have not wrapped a car in shrink wrap. A different coworker at a different job, I did wrap her desk in shrink wrap. Everything except her plant. I didn't want her plant to die.
Nice.
And the only reason I wrapped hers in shrink wrap was because she didn't tell me she was going on vacation. She was like my cubby buddy. She sat like in the same, like right across from me in the cubby.
Yeah.
She didn't tell me she was going on vacation. I'm like, how dare you not tell me you're going on fucking vacation? So I
unacceptable.
I saran wrapped and shrink wrapped her desk. Then I called in sick one day. Didn't even go on vacation. I called in sick and I even texted her, hey, I'm not going to be there today. Sick. I'm calling off work. And I came back and found all of my personal belongings packed in a box with a label on it. Like, you know, when they fire you and they put the label on the box. Around me was kind of freaking out. I walked in, I see the box. I just turned around and looked at her. I'm like, really, this is what you got? Everybody else was like, holy shit. We thought you were getting fired. I was like, no, it was just this one over here returning the prank. So yeah, we don't do that at my current job. We're kind of boring. Of course, also most of us aren't in the office anymore. So what are you gonna do?
True.
Hard to prank somebody when you're working from home. Not impossible. I will think of something. I have coworkers I could prank. But anyway, I digress. It's not even April. Anyway. On to the original topic, the actual show that we are discussing. This episode originally aired on April 2nd, 2016. It opens with Ben apologizing for offending someone, a man, a leprechaun, let's face it, is yelling at Ben for insulting him by saying he bets he gets a lot of action on St. Patrick's Day. How are you not going to get a lot of action on St. Patrick's Day if you're a leprechaun? This is, sure. How is that an insult? Whatever, I'm not a leprechaun, I don't know. But anyway, not all leprechauns are Irish. The one on the phone happens to be from Northern Ireland, two different countries. And yes, they are two different countries, for those of you not in the know. And his name is Declan McQuaid. And my Irish accent sucks, so I apologize. Anyway, he called to complain about all the people following the rainbow to get to the pot of gold. He claims that there is no gold. Ben argues, everybody knows there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We all know, don't try to fool us and say it's not.
It's true.
Declan tries to convince that bronze is better than gold. Who says so? Bronze is second at least to gold and silver. Nope. Then Declan comes back with a limerick for Ben. And yeah, this is actually one of my favorite parts in like the whole show ever. There once was a man named Ben Arnold. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck you.
Fucking goddamn Trent.
I know. I change my
lip. Oh my God.
Whomever, like the rando on Twitter that I was fighting with earlier today. There once was a Twitter rando. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck you. And see, it works for everybody.
It does.
Yes. Ben apologizes to the audience for the call. He's like, I'm sorry, folks. I don't know what the fuck went off the rails there, but whatever. Anyway. He knows that there are callers waiting. They want to be the first to call in about the upcoming interview. First interview, first public appearance with Tim Jensen since his return to Kingdom Falls. They're just waiting for Sammy to get to the Jensen residence and set up the remote equipment. So Ben takes some calls. Line nine is my favorite stoner and yours, Dole Bevins, baby, Dole Bevins. He called to talk to Ben Tintin. Ben's like, dude, we're waiting on Sammy. I'm going to have to cut this short. And they have to hang up on you because, you know, we all know how Ben feels about Doyle. I don't know why Ben doesn't like Doyle. I mean, I know he explained it in one of the episodes, but that's not a reason to not like Doyle. Whatever, just because he's a stoner. Doyle says he's having a rough night on his end. Sherlock Bromes. That's where we get Sherlock Bromes and Ben Tintin from. He's having a humdinger of an issue at Casa de Doyle. And the show is his one and only, the only place he can turn. Because he always looks to Ben, who is, you know, kind of creeped out by this, but who wouldn't be? And Ben asks him, you know, is his deep freeze, you know, got a portal to an interstellar universe? He's like, see, that's what I'm talking about. You always care. You're always concerned, looking out for me. But to know... No, tonight's call is not about no spooky stuff. Although he still has that kind of thing going around. He's just gotten used to it. Which kind of makes me think, I may not want to live in Hollybrook. I'll stick with King Falls. Hollybrook may be a little out of there. I'm just saying. For those of you not familiar with Hollybrook, it's even more haunted than King Falls, apparently. But it just happens. Yes, like I said, he's used to it. He's calling because he's lonely. He can't leave his house because of the spell put on his lawn and the rainbow lights are messing things up with the reception on a satellite. You move to King Falls, get cable, not satellite. Pro tip. Ben doesn't want to drag the traveling band of gypsies into this because he's already pissed off, you know, one group of little people for the evening. Although, are gypsies little people? I don't think they are. One group of listeners anyway. And so he skips over that, the whole, you know, lawn thing. Doyle's called because he needs, and I quote, some loving. Poor Doyle. Are you distracted, Dawn? Am I not keeping you? Okay. Sorry. The look on your face was like, could you just hurry up already?
You are fine.
All right. Anyway, Doyle's calling. He needs some loving. He knows Ben is pretty good with the ladies. Ben, of course, scoffs and denies that he's good with any ladies. He was good with one lady until he made an ass out of himself. Because, you know, reference in Aladdin, don't make it right. Mm-hmm. And throwing hush puppies. I'm just saying. Doyle tries to console Ben and not to beat himself up over it. Which kind of distracts Ben for a second. He starts to open up and then he realizes who the hell he's talking to. Like, why am I talking to you about this? And Doyle agrees that, you know, we'll keep Emily off the table. There are other fish in the sea and maybe they should, and I'm quoting Doyle here, get a boat from Ron John Begley and head out to the open waters. Ben takes this literally. And of course, it's a metaphor. Come on, Ben, get with it. I know you're distracted, but come on. Doyle just means that he thinks they should team up and find dates because two handsome guys like them should do well. Not quite sure I picture Doyle as being super handsome.
No.
Thinking kind of scrawny, stoner, not dirty, just, you know, maybe a little, you know, could take a bath maybe every other day. Kind of
scruffy,
you know, scruffy. Yeah, scruffy. But anyway, nothing against that though. If that's your type, hey, go for it. Much to Ben's relief, the hotline rings. So in the background, so he tells Doyle, you know, Feel for you, buddy, but you got to get past this curse or haunting or whatever's going on the lawn and move on with your life. Doyle says it's not easy, and Ben agrees it's not easy for anybody, but he's not looking for anybody else at the moment. Just trying to be the man that Emily deserves. And Doyle understands that, and Ben kind of is like, God damn it, you know, went off track again, hangs up on Doyle and picks up the phone. But before he can actually hang up, my brain froze. Doyle asks him to get his phone number and give it to all of the single digits, give his cougars his digits. Ben says it won't happen, but yeah, sure, whatever. And Doyle's like, dude, just make sure they play with the beanbags first, and hangs up. Doyle, we're going a little too far, even for late night radio. Ben picks up the hotline. It's not Sammy. It's Cynthia, everybody's favorite housewife, Cynthia. Cynthia. I love Cynthia. Ben's like, why are you calling the hotline? She's like, nope, dude, this is the regular number, the one you always give out. And it's like, no, it's really not, but okay, whatever. She tells Ben that he could stop daydreaming about ray guns and library girls and do his job, he'd know it was the regular number. Cynthia just antagonizes the hell out of poor Ben.
She does.
But I'm here for it, so, you know. Ben starts to say that he was thinking about someone, but instead, Cynthia says, instead he asks what she's calling about. She says she's calling about a serious matter, but he's just babbling on about phone numbers. Ben asks her to call back on the normal line because he's waiting for Sammy. Cynthia says, of course he's waiting for big city Sammy, who doesn't have to show up for work like the rest of the people. And Ben's like, aren't you like a homemaker? You know, like,
a little bit.
Yeah. Aren't you a stay-at-home mom? She's like, yes, she's a homemaker, calling the boys communists and socialists. And you know what? Being a homemaker and a stay-at-home mom is a legit job. I am not putting these women down. It's a job I couldn't do. For a reason, because I only like kids when I can give them back. A frustrated Ben tries to get her back to call back on the other line, but just ain't happening. And she replies, oh yeah, I forgot that Captain Spock Skywalker is making his first public statement, which pisses off not just Ben, but several of us, because you cannot mix Star Wars and Star Trek like that, Cynthia.
The entire town is probably super up in arms with that.
Oh yeah. To which Cynthia replies that Ben is kind of cute when his force awakens. But don't take that tone with her. This is, I think, our first little inkling of Cynthia's feelings towards Ben changing somewhat. They've gone from lukewarm at best to kind of, you're kind of cute, Ben. Ben glosses over the fact that she called him cute and he's just happy she made the force reference, right? And tells her he's going to hang up. She tells him not to set his lightsaber on stun, which literally made his brain hurt and mine. He cuts to a commercial, and this would be Dora's favorite commercial. You can find her at the cool Dora, as opposed to the uncool Dora, who we don't know because she's not cool. On Twitter. It's the DJ Eazy-E Kid Rap Awareness Institute, and they're offering classes for people like us, and mostly they're talking to you middle-aged Caucasian men who don't understand today's youth and music. DJ-E Kid has a PhD in thugonomics as well as being board certified in rapology. They are offering classes on Fridays at 7 at the local, and they are located conveniently in the King Falls Mall next to Preston's Pretzels. They only take cash. Now, with the pandemic hitting, DJE Kid did start doing online classes, for those of you who don't know.
Thought they did.
They did, yes. You have to Google him. But then you can learn to speak Thugonomics and rap just like DJ E-Kid. So when he tells you to get, and I'm going to misquote him here because I did not pay for the class, so I don't know, to get down into hizzy with the his house, then what he really means is you're hanging with your bros in the house, I think. I don't know. Dora, if you have some insight into this, let us know. I'm just saying. Ben comes back from the announcement, and they're only minutes away from Sammy sitting down with Tim Jensen. And while they're waiting, he takes another call. Line three, it's everybody's favorite librarian, Emily. It's everybody's favorite is calling in tonight, apparently. That's my theme for the day. Ben stammers, asking how she and the library are doing. They're both doing well. No apparitions have been seen lately. Ben is also doing well. He says he's doing good, but he's doing well. Emily says that things are quiet. Ben keeps stammering because, you know, he's just still after the whole hush puppy incident. Doesn't know what the hell he's doing talking to Emily anymore. But everything's quiet and the library needs a break, which is good because the library needs a break from Honest Abe and John Wilkes Booth. Emily breaks in saying, yeah, it's good. Breaks can be good. Ben agrees. Some breaks are good. Some not so much. In fact, they're excruciating and soul-wrenching, heartbreaking, but much needed. Emily then realizes they are not talking about the library. Sorry, folks. Ben says he doesn't think they are either, but he doesn't really have experience with breaks, except, you know, this one. He starts to say something else, but Emily finally interrupts him with, you know, like, hey, I've got a topic. I am calling for a reason. She goes ahead and, of course, you know, he says she can call in time for whatever reason. She doesn't need one, but she is calling to wish Tim well. She's glad he's back and she's thinking about him, or was thinking about him while he was gone. She can't wait for Ben and Sammy to talk to him. They've kept him in everybody's hearts and minds. So there's, you know, a bond there between the boys and Tim, which we will explore in later episodes. And she's sure that there will be, you know, a lot of thanks and love for them as well as for Tim. There's an uncomfortable moment and kind of a flirtatious goodbye between them before Emily hangs up the phone, leaving Ben flustered yet again. Yep. Poor Ben. He gets flustered a lot in the early days, doesn't he?
He does.
I'm glad he kind of grew out of that. Although, I don't know, flustered Ben combined with Ben Splosions is kind of a fun Ben. I'm just saying. He doesn't get flustered as much, but when he does, watch out. Anyway, he takes another call. It's line three. It's Cynthia again. And she's teasing Ben about missing his little library girl. Ben shuts her down and asks if she has a message for Tim or what. She says to tell Tim that she's so happy he's back home and hopes that he's enjoying being back with his family. And Ben's like, what happened to Pluto Pox? So she gets upset that he even brought it up. And he points out that she mentioned it. And she just wanted to know if Obamacare covered it. And she's just happy that Tim is home and that her kids go to a different school than his kids. Ben starts to say that he'll let Tim know, but there's a crash in the background at Cynthia's house. And Cynthia tells him to hang on while she starts yelling at her kids, Chad and Brad, to get back into bed. And yeah, this show is between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. Those little fuckers need to be back in bed because they're school this time. I don't even care if it's not even summer break. It's April. Yeah. No little fuckers, even if it's spring break, need to get their asses back in bed. One of the boys picks up the phone and tells Ben that their mom has a really, really big crush on Ben and wants to give him a big fat kiss. Ben tells them to go to sleep, but they continue telling him that she writes about him in her journal and she wants to wrestle him. And they don't get why you would, you know, want to wrestle somebody you got a crush on? Boys, wait till you get to high school, you'll figure that one out. Ben accuses them of making this up, and they're like, nope, she even has a poster of him on her wall, and at night she just hugs the wall and licks his poster. It's kind of gross, Cynthia. Ben denies. He's like, nah, I know you're just making shit up, because there aren't even any, you know, Ben Arnold posters. Cynthia gets back on the phone and asks Ben what they said to him, and being the polite Ben that he is, he tells her, you know, I heard talking, but I couldn't really tell what they were saying. So she just, you know, kind of stammers and hangs up the phone, reminding him to not tell Tim about the Pluto pox before she hangs up. The hotline rings, and finally it's Sammy, and he's ready to go. Tim is there. He's just a little nervous. Mary's there too. Ben and Sammy remind the listeners that Tim went missing on May 1st because they've been living in a box for a year. I don't know. And while talking to them on the air for the first, this is his very first appearance after the rainbow lights. And he was recently found just a couple weeks ago near Archie's Pomchi Palace. Sammy apologizes to Mary for having to bring everything back up again. He knows it's been hard on her and the kids. But of course, you know, Mary being Mary tells him not to apologize. And they wouldn't have gotten through any of this without their help. Sammy announces that Tim is here. He's happy to see Tim back. Tim thanks Sammy and Ben, who welcomes him home. Tim also thanks them for telling them Mary and I appreciate all you've done. She's been filling me in on the last couple of weeks, trying to get me up to speed on a year that just disappeared isn't an easy thing. And Mary's like, yeah, boy, you can say that again. To which Tim replies verbatim, oh, okay, Mary and I appreciate all you've done. She's been filling me in on the last couple of weeks, trying to get me up to speed on a year that disappeared isn't an easy thing. Kind of throws everybody off, but you know, he's been gone a year and he suffered some trauma. So we all let it slide. Sammy laughs nervously. Mary says that Tim is taking it the best he can. Tim says it's been scary. His last memory was being on the phone with Sammy and Ben, seeing the lights hovering and a humming noise. And then it didn't seem like any time at all passed before being at Archie's. And he doesn't remember much. He remembers sounds he can't describe, colors, and gets flashes when he tries to sleep, but can't distinguish between real memories and being strapped down in what appears to be a colorful Apple store. Mary jumps in saying Tim is having trouble adjusting to a regular sleep schedule. He's been having a lot of dreams. Tim concurs saying, or corrects her saying nightmares, and apologizes to Sammy that he knows this isn't the interview they were hoping for. Sammy says this is exactly what they were hoping for and that they're just glad he's home. And Tim kind of mumbles, repeats him with the word home. Ben tries to bring everything back, reminding Tim that he mentioned remembering humming noises and rainbow lights, and then knocking on Archie's door. And does he think the lights had anything to do with his disappearance? Tim thinks they have everything to do with it. He knows he was with the lights and the UFO, but his mind is pretty much blocked out everything in between. They talk again about Tim having trouble sleeping and the quality of sleep not being very good. When he does sleep, Mary woke up one time at 4 a.m. and Tim was just on his hands and knees staring at the TV, but there was nothing on. He wasn't watching the TV. Tim doesn't remember this. Mary says she's just happy Tim's back. And that's all that matters. They'll figure it all out. Sammy tells Tim that if it's too much, he doesn't have to talk. Tim says he feels obligated to the town and Mary and the kids, and that he feels like they all need something from him, and that he owes them something, but he can't deliver it. And Mary pretty much breaks down in tears, like, no, that's not what I said. You shouldn't feel that way. She excuses herself. Tim apologizes to Sammy, tells him that he has nothing to be sorry about, and he's not obligated to anyone, and that all anybody wants for him is to be back home and safe. Ben agrees. It's not like he faked his own death and was caught playing, you know, slots in Vegas. Tim says he just doesn't feel that way, like he doesn't know himself anymore. The boys sympathize that it must be hard on him and the family. Tim recognizes people and things, but nothing stands out to him, like he's looking for something and doesn't know what. But he thanks them and everybody and hopes that someday he can repay him. Sammy tells him there's nothing to pay them back for. Tim mentions that he's feeling under the weather and asks, can they continue later? Sammy says that's perfectly fine. Tim starts mumbling again. He mumbles perfectly fine, repeating Sammy. And then he says, be well, King Falls. Sorry, that was my psycho imitation for those of you who didn't get that. Ben tells him to get some rest. And then Tim just says, we're here, King Falls. The boys ask him what he said, and he's like, and he repeated about feeling under the weather. And continues about, you know, can they continue this another time? Tim thanks Sammy for coming by and telling Ben to tell his mother hello. Sammy starts to sign off, but Mary tells him, can he hang on? Sammy's not leaving. Ben asks if everything is okay. She says that they are. They're all fine. They're all safe. But she's worried about Tim, that it's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. She knows he's been through a traumatic experience, but she didn't think it would be this hard. She can't explain it. But she doesn't recognize Tim, and that she's uneasy and how he kind of blanks out mid-conversation and how his eyes flicker out. Or sometimes he just sits in the kids' room staring at the ceiling. Sometimes he's mumbling words or sounds, but nothing that she can understand. And she's cut off by Tim crying for help, so she leaves. Sammy starts to tell Ben he's packing up when he screams, oh my God, because Bella Jensen startled him. Sammy asks if she's okay and apologizes if they woke her up, but she just tells him, you know, that her daddy's not the same anymore and her daddy scares her. And that's where the episode ends. I promise I will try to move through Charlie and the Chocolate Factory more quickly than I move through King Falls, just to keep you awake. I know you've had a rough day. It's been a long day.
A little bit.
It's been a long weekend already, and it's only Saturday. I get it. All right, kids. This is the last episode of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Once again, once they tell us they're recording season three, once they announce the release dates, we will repeat it. It will be Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. No. Chamber of Secrets, that's the second one. Yeah, Chamber of Secrets. So at least we know what season three will be. Anyway, so according to Noah, they are giving the book the ending that it intended. We don't know why Ron Dahl didn't give them this ending, but, you know, that's what it is. Owen manages Owen has a message for the audience. Someone channeled their inner Ben Arnold and laid on the censor button, however, so we don't know what that actual message was. Then we get the previously on Improv on Tape. Mike TV was stuck in a TV. He's really an adult. He's finally coming into his character arc now that he's about to end. And then there's a fight to the death with Grandpa Joe, although nobody died. Well, between he and Grandpa Joe, nobody died. Everyone gets into the glass elevator, and the final confrontation between Wonka and Grandpa Joe is about to begin. Grandpa Joe tries, stay awake, Dawn. Grandpa Joe, point out that Charlie is the only child left. He's the last one standing, and Wonka isn't paying attention. So Charlie has to tell him even louder because, you know, Wonka is like that. He doesn't pay attention. And he asks, what happened to the other kids? You know, what happened to the German kid? And his mother, who for some reason is still there, says that he's dead. Charlie knows something crazy is about to happen and tells everyone who is left that he has a feeling about the factory and remembers passing it before and thinking that this was exactly that something was weird and believing that Wonka would one day give it to him. And it would be in his inheritance. And even Mike heard it. Wonka asked Charlie if he really wants that. And even the Garys and Grandpa Joe ask, including Gary 473, who still has the world's creepiest fucking voice, as far as I'm concerned. Because they said his name, they summoned him. Wonka goes to hit the button on the elevator that says up and out. But first he asks the Garys to sing about what it does. And they sing about how the elevator is made of titanium and glass and moves your ass. That's basically their song. But they like it. And Grandpa Joe yells, wait for it. What has Grandpa Joe yelled on?
I'm Grandpa Joe.
Yes. What does Grandpa Joe say?
Or is it Glee?
Yes.
Glee.
Wonka sort of remembers that there is a roof. They got to break through it, but whatever. He can't seem to tell the others what it is. So he's playing charades because he can't seem to think of the word roof. Grandpa Joe's like, you mean a ceiling? Like a glass ceiling? Like women have to break through? Gary 473 is still in the elevator with them because Gary 473 is a creepy little fucker. And Grandpa Joe even comments, or no, she comments that this is going to be worse than what happened in the Vietnam War. And Gary 473 admits that she even started the war, which makes sense. If hitting the ceiling doesn't kill them, will she still be there? Because Grandpa Joe wants to end his life if she is. After they break through the roof, Wonka pushes the button and makes sure the elevator stops in midair as they look down on the town. Charlie talks about, how scared he is and is surprised that Gary 2 and Gary 18 are still on the elevator, even though they were just singing a moment ago. Because apparently somebody forgot that they were just singing a second ago. And he makes some short jokes. He even channeled his own, King Falls people and was making short jokes that would make even Ben Arnold proud. Gary 2 calls the town a shithole. At least the part that Charlie lives in.
If he only knew.
Right? Charlie continues to describe his feelings and the town. He wants to escape. He wants to drop napalm on the town, and Grandpa Joe is apparently rubbing off on him. Wonka explains that the only thing powering the elevator is a wish and a prayer. Gary 2 and Gary 18 discuss how they filled up the wishes part of the tank, but they ran out of prayers, so they didn't fill that part. But maybe if they pray to Gary 473, she'll keep them in the air. And again, you cannot keep mentioning her name. She will appear. Like, I'm waiting for her to show up in my living room anytime. She does appear and tells everyone that they have to bow down to her. Grandpa Joe says he will if he can face his enemies in battle, but it doesn't work. She knows he's faking. So everyone starts saying kerplop, 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 and that works because that's apparently how you pray to 473. Wonka points out that the other children are alive and leaving the factory. And he asked Charlie how this makes him feel, but no napalm. He's not allowed to drop napalm on the kids. And Charlie says it makes him hungry for power and wants to decimate the lives of everyone in his way, wanting to watch them leave broken or forever having entered his world in the first place. And Wonka breaks down with tears of joy because that's just exactly what he wanted to hear, because Wonka's a motherfucking psycho.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And apparently Charlie is a motherfucking psycho right there with him. Charlie asks Wonka if he is really his grandfather. They hug and invite the Garys into the hug. Gary 2 and Gary 18 sing a sweet little song about family until 473 joins in and singing that family is great because if you're on a desert island, family is what you get to eat. 473 is a bigger psycho than Charlie and Wonka put together. I'm just saying. The elevator lowers, giving them a better view of the other children leaving. They spot Mike TV, who is still tiny. He yells that just because he's little on the outside doesn't mean He's a little on the inside and he yells menacingly at Grandpa Joe. And Grandpa Joe jokes that about Mike TV's small dick, because you know, if you're small, you got a small weenie. And Grandpa Joe takes off his shoe to throw it at Mike. But before he does that, he asks 473 to take a shit in his shoe, but it melts the shoe, so he doesn't throw it at Mike. Ted Cruz shows up again. He smelled Paula Deen and decided, you know, that he wanted to join in. But I guess he discovered that it wasn't actually Paula Deen cooking. It was 473 shit. I know Paula Deen's like, you know, an asshole and a jerk, and we don't like her anymore, but I can't imagine her cooking smells that bad. Maybe 473 didn't use enough butter. I don't know. They see a truck, and Wonka explains to Charlie now that they are filled with supplies that will make him happy for the rest of his life. They land the elevator so that they can open the truck and see what it is that will make Charlie happy. And it's sheets. Yay, sheets. Now they have more than one sheet to share between the whole family.
Oh my God.
Augustus and his parents walk by. Augustus is talking about what happened to him and how he's disappointed that Wonka said he was going to serve a full meal, but they didn't get any appetizers or after dinner drinks. Not even coffee or a dinner mint. So they decide they're going to go to the 50s diner. Before the others can get back into the elevator, Violet comes out and tells Charlie what's been happening to her. She's still a 50s diner, which is apparently where, you know, Augustus was going to eat, but I'm not too sure about that now, because she's falling apart. Her roof is caving in. Her fixtures aren't polished. But she's going to serve Augustus a $22 hamburger with no sides, not even a pickle. And their special is...
That's harsh.
That is harsh. And their special is, of all things, a Cobb salad. Come on. Yeah, she needs to be turned back into a human at some point. Or just completely crumble, because a Cobb salad is your special? Come on. Veruca comes out next. She's all covered in garbage, and Grandpa Joe laughs. And, of course, Mr. Salt threatens to sue. Mike TV shows up again. He went back inside so he could get stretched out. And now he looks like Slender Man. He's 8'5" and 98 pounds. But he's glad he got a second chance at life. And he's choosing to let go of hate. So Mrs. TV, of course, is glad that he's been born again. Mrs. TV's a wacko. Wonka thinks Mike has never looked better and asks him to do a little catwalk while Gary's drop a beat. He puts Mike in the elevator and sends him off to Milan to become a model. Wonka tells Charlie all the things he loves about the factory, which include mistakes, strange contraptions, aborted creatures, and, you know, that haunt the place, and children who barely escape death. And now it will all be Charlie's because he is going to be the CEO, and all sociopaths. Because all sociopaths are CEOs, and he had to teach this Charlie how to be a sociopath. But two more people need to die before Charlie can complete his training. And it happens to be that those two people are not the Garys, but Grandpa Joe and Wonka. Sorry, folks. My throat has gotten dry. Wonka explains that he is giving Charlie the factory because he and Grandpa Joe are going to die and somebody has to inherit it. And yes, he really is Charlie's grandfather. Grandpa Joe announces that an epic fight scene must commence in his best video game voice. Wonka says he needs a weapon and one of the Garys volunteers to be his weapon. But Grandpa Joe has to apologize for hitting Wonka first while his back was turned, looking for a weapon. Gary comments that this is a weird fight. And instead of bleeding, there is chocolate coming out of Wonka's mouth. Gary 473 is disgustingly licking up the remains while Grandpa Joe is bleeding out. The narrator tells us that Wonka tells Grandpa Joe that he's too old to help run a factory, but Grandpa Joe keeps talking over him. Grandpa Joe apologizes for the scene. It's Wonka's for stealing the scene. It's Wonka's moment, since his name is the one on the book. But Wonka remains silent, so Grandpa Joe continues, saying Wonka is humble for being silent and everyone should take a moment to listen. Wonka breathes his last breath and dies, but Grandpa Joe jumps over to save him while he's bleeding to death himself. We never figure that one out. But he saves him by stimulating his prostate and giving him mouth to mouth. Charlie and the Garys are very confused. I'm thinking Wonka's probably very confused at this point. And the Garys start to pray very loudly to 473. 473 does save Wonka. He comes back to life. So yay, praise 473. Which kind of sounded like a little Easter egg to another podcast that shall remain nameless because we don't really talk about them anymore. But I'm not sure. It wasn't an all hail, it was a praise. So, you know, I could be wrong. Wonka explains that a child is the best person to run the factory because only a child can make the same mistakes that he made. And that's how, and he ain't even on drugs, but that's how things get done there. They make wrong choices because they don't believe in science. It's more of a why not than a why. Even though why not get you things like 473. Charlie finally understands the idea behind the golden ticket. He explains it to Grandpa Joe that it's 50-50. It's always been 50-50. Either you get a 473 or you get a Danny DeVito. Wonka put out the tickets knowing it would be a kid or it wouldn't. Grandpa said either everything matters or it doesn't. And Charlie agrees because they've gone off on that new math again. And that they went through all of this and it either mattered or it didn't. Wonka gives... Wonka takes Grandpa Joe and Charlie back home and asks if the rest of the family wants to move into the factory, but Mr. Bucket wants to know why no one is knocking on their non-existent door. Mrs. Bucket is happy about the truckload of sheets because now she doesn't have to do laundry so much. Grandpa Joe explains to the other grandparents what is going on while Charlie explains to Mr. Bucket how it's in just a few hours Charlie has learned to be a she-wolf and a CEO and to take life for the better of faceless corporations that take life immaterially. Charlie's dad says they found the dream. Charlie says that they can now pay off his credit card, which is good because the bill comes due in 3 days. His father asks if there's a job for him at the factory, but Charlie starts explaining about the Garys. And when one of them shows up, startling everyone, he tells his father that there's a lesson he can learn from the Garys about the work ethic, because apparently he doesn't think Mr. Bucket has a work ethic. And Charlie did his part to now become part of the 1%, and he should never forget where he came from, though. So he shows Charlie his hands that they've gotten worse, which kind of makes Charlie a little bit sick. Charlie introduces his father to Gary 473, who tells him that she's Jesus, and that there's also a Susan, the female Gary that we apparently haven't talked about until now, in the back. Ted Cruz shows up once again. Ted just can't keep himself out of it. I wonder if Ted Cruz is going to make an appearance in Harry Potter.
You know what? That's a good question. That is a good question. I don't know.
I don't either.
The world may never know.
Or we might when season 3 comes out. I think it would be interesting for Ted Cruz to make an appearance in season 3, or, you know, in the next Harry Potter one, season 3. Just a suggestion. I'm just putting that out there to the universe. Take it or don't, whatever. Anyway, Ted Cruz shows up. He's with OSHA City Planning, and he wants to know how the election rigging fuck they ended up in this house, because they thought Ted would, but everyone's like, well, you were in the elevator the whole time, so how do you not know we ended up in the house? But he missed the part where the narrator clearly gave direction that they were going to Charlie's house and that they sent the elevator off to Milan with Mike TV. Ted is still confused, so Wonka explains it to him, that he asked Charlie if, by asking Charlie if he's been watching Shadow and Bone on Netflix, and of course Charlie has. Now how can they afford Netflix if they only got one sheet share between the whole family?
Well, you know, maybe
they stole the neighbor's Wi-Fi password.
Yeah, I mean, well, plus, I mean, if they maybe they got something, because okay, so back in the day, I got Spotify Premium, and I was able to find out that I could hook myself up with Hulu for free because I had Spotify Premium. It was like, you know, one of those things that they did. So I'm not paying at all for Hulu.
See, now I'm paying for Hulu, but not Spotify, but I don't have the premium. I wonder if that works both ways. If I can get Spotify Premium for free since I'm paying for Hulu.
I don't know, because like I got hooked up with Hulu. It was like over a year ago.
Yeah.
So I'm paying like the $10 a month for Spotify.
Yeah.
But I'm not paying for Hulu. So maybe they were paying like money for something and then they got their Netflix for free.
Maybe
money for something and Netflix for free. Yeah.
Pay for the something to get Netflix if they can only afford one sheet.
I think, well, they just, you know, they don't, they clearly don't have their priorities in order.
Clearly. I mean, especially when all they have to eat is cabbage. Like, gross. Yep. Anyway, Mike TV shows back up with the elevator. It came crashing through the roof because no one taught him how to fly it on his way to Milan. Mrs. Bucket's legs have been crushed by the elevator, and she just wants...
Christ.
All she wants now is to do one more load of laundry and to see her little boy, Charlie. And Mike is like, I'm not responsible for that, am I? Wonka and Charlie get back in the elevator, but the narrator can't seem to tell us what happens next. He's having a really hard time saying it flew back out the hole that it crashed through. At least I think that's what he's trying to say. Everyone gets in the elevator except Mrs. Bucket, who is, you know, crushed and dying. And Mr. Bucket says he will stay and watch over her while she dies. Charlie sings a song about what is waiting for him at the factory. The Garys join in. He and his mother sing goodbye to each other. The Garys sing to sum up what the story happened, but 473 joins in and sings that it is that she is the one true god and kerplop. Before handing over the keys to the factory, Wonka takes Charlie's hands. They are clammy, just like his, because they are she-wolves, and they howl together. And that, my friends, is the end of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yay! Golf claps all around.
Did you know?
I did not know. What?
That there is actually a fucking sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I did know that.
And it is whacked.
I have never read it, but I did know that there was a sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate
Factory. It is straight up whacked.
Whacked enough for these guys to do the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
They probably wouldn't even know what to do with themselves if they read it, honestly, because it's just so out there.
Kind of like they've already done the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I think that Improv on Tape came to Ronald Dahl in a dream and told him the sequel.
That, considering some of the other things that Ronald Dahl has come up with, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep.
I'm just saying, the man I'm out there. Like, these are children's books he's writing. Woo, boys, that was a big yawn Dawn had.
Yep.
Let me tell you, it was like the Grand Canyon all over again. I know. What am I saying? I got a bigger mouth than she does. I'm the one who does all the talking around here. Anyway, that was the end of that. Do you have any plugs?
Do I? Not right off the top of my head, no.
Okay. I've got two. And I apologize if I mispronounce your name. Her name is Tia. You can find her on @Vincent_Tia with two A's on Twitter. And I've been meaning to make this announcement for a couple of weeks now, or a couple of episodes now. I kept leaving my sticky note downstairs. She did an animatics from King Falls, and it's on YouTube. There is a link from her Twitter onto the YouTube.
What?
Yes. I saw it like weeks ago. It's probably been over a month since I saw it.
I must fucking see it.
Yes, you do. You really must fucking see it. It's really, really good. I am super impressed. So everybody go out and watch it and give her, you know, props for it. Also, I'm assuming by your name you go by her. If you choose other pronouns, I do apologize. I did not look that up, so I am sorry. Also, there is a new podcast I've been listening to. And I've been reluctant to be recommending podcasts lately because, you know, of the fact that they've all been quitting. But this one is coming out as a... Yeah, and others that shall remain nameless. But this one is coming out as far as I know, it's being billed as a limited run. So they're only making a certain amount of episodes and then it's done. So they quit intentionally, not because, you know, of reasons. It's called Aftermath. It's pretty good. It happens after an earthquake that takes out pretty much all of California. The reason I picked it up is because one of the voices is Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and JDM, hello, how are you not going to listen to this?
Yep.
But yeah, it's pretty good. So you all should go listen to that. It's on, you know, Apple Play.
I mean, Spotify, Negan demands it. All the places. Negan demands it.
Negan does demand
listen
it.
To this podcast.
Negan demands it, little pig. Go listen. So that is my only two plugs today. If Dawn finds the link to the animatic, she can put it in the show notes.
Yep.
Anyway, anything else from you, Dawn? No. Okay.
Sorry.
You're still tired.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been Shotgun Saturday Nights. It is edited and produced by Dawn Blake, outlined by Dana Olson. Follow us on Twitter at ShotgunSammy71. Or email us your questions, comments, and concerns at shotgunsaturdaynights@gmail.com. And guys, email us. Our email's sitting there empty. Crickets out there. Crickets, I tell you.
You know what? I'm getting emails from like Podchaser, and that's it. And Twitter.
Yeah.
I'd like to have emails from people saying, Dawn, you fucking suck. Or saying, Dawn, you're amazing. Or Dana is amazing and you fucking suck. You know, I want to see emails from people.
Dana is way too fucking long-winded and she needs to cut out some of the goddamn notes.
Nobody said
they were putting Dawn to sleep.
You weren't putting me to sleep. My fucking headache that I took some aspirin for was putting me to sleep.
In fact, I think the only reason I stayed awake as long as I did was because I was actually doing all the talking. But anyway, don't forget to like, share, and review. Have a good night.
We are two tired podcasters, and we're going to fucking take a nap.
We are, yes. I think a nap is definitely in order. Anyway, be well, King Falls.
And wash your hands.
Thank you for listening to Shotgun Saturday Nights, an unofficial King Falls AM fan cast. Our intro music is Get Ready by Fesleyan Studios. And our outro track is The Slumber of the Blackwood by As Above, So Below off their album Ritos 2, which is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. Until next time.